Jewish Education and Media is pleased to present L'Chaim, a program that highlights the people, issues, and events of importance to the Jewish community. Now here is your host, Rabbi Mark Golub.
I'm Mark Golub, and perhaps the most famous character in Jewish folklore today is Tevye. Everyone knows who Tevye is. And of course, it's all because of the iconic Broadway musical by Sheldon Harnack, Jerry Bock, and Joseph Stein, Fiddler on the Roof, which premiered on September 22, 1964, won 9 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, became the longest-running Broadway show of its era, and starred Zero Mostel, and thereafter a vast list of Jewish actors, both well-known and less-known, as well as many non-Jewish actors. It became a hit movie starring Topol as Tevye. It had numerous Broadway revivals, is regularly seen in community theaters across the country and around the world. It's been translated into virtually every language imaginable. The musical was based on a classic series of Yiddish stories written by perhaps the most famous and beloved of all Yiddish writers, Shalom Aleichem, toward the end of the 19th century and beginning of the 20th century, entitled Tevye the Dairyman and His Daughters. What many people don't know is that Shalom Aleichem, whose real name was Salomon Rabinovich, based his fictional character on a real live Tevye. And what most people don't know is that the storyline of Fiddler on the Roof does not completely follow the story of Tevye the Dairyman, written by Shalom Aleichem. The Shalom Aleichem Tevye is not as comical a character, and the challenges he faces over the assimilation of his daughters in a Pale of Settlement village in Russia is drawn more sharply by Shalom Aleichem. Shalom Aleichem's Tevye, in many ways, is a more profoundly complex human character than the cartoon character we see in Fiddler on the Roof, as lovable as he may be to audiences around the world. Well, one remarkably talented individual who has a profound knowledge of and love for the stories of Shalom Aleichem. In fact, he performs annually to commemorate Shalom Aleichem's Yahrzeit at the Brotherhood Synagogue in New York City. He has co-authored an off-Broadway production about Shalom Aleichem's real Tevye, and it's called Tevye Served Raw. It's a marvelous ode to Shalom Aleichem. The evening features excerpts of some of Shalom Aleichem's greatest stories and always comes back to scenes from Tevye the Dairyman. By the way, Tevye Served Raw is completing a limited run in New York City through Wednesday, February 13th. So if you live in the greater New York metropolitan area, you still have time to see Tevye Served Raw at the Playroom Theater at 151 West 46th Street, just east of 7th Avenue. And Tevye Served Raw stars one of America's foremost character actors, Alan Lewis Rickman, who's joined by his wife, Yelena Shmulinson, a most talented and accomplished actor in her own right, and by the co-author of Tevye Served Raw, Shane Baker. And many of you know that one of my passions is the theater, and so it's a real kick for me to welcome to L'Chaim the co-author, director, and star of Tevye Served Raw, Alan Lewis Rickman, who many of you know from his recurring role in the HBO hit series Boardwalk Empire, for his recurring role as Red Skelton in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Alan Rickman has had featured roles in the Coen Brothers' Oscar-nominated film A Serious Man, playing Velvel, the shtetl husband. He was in Fading Gigolo with Liev Schreiber, The Cobbler with Dustin Hoffman, just to name a few of Allen's long list of film and television credits. And when he's not in front of the camera, Alan Rickman is a brilliant director, known for his own musical, Christmas at the Small Empire, and for the Drama Desk-nominated Yiddish Pirates of Penzance, which he also co-adapted. Alan is an internationally produced playwright. His work has been presented in 6 languages, and it is so wonderful to have you at this table. Thank you, Alan, so very much for being here.
Thanks for the invite. My pleasure.
Well, there's so much I want to know about you as well as your work with Tevye, but first of all, who the heck are you?
Where were you? Stamayi, just a Jew.
From where? Where were you born? Where
from
you
Hunger.
Where?
I'm from Hunger. Some of your older audience viewers may get that joke. I'm from Far Rockaway originally.
Far Rockaway, New York.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. And what kind of Jewish home did you grow up in?
A modern Orthodox home.
Modern Orthodox.
I went to yeshiva. I went to a nice modern Orthodox yeshiva.
Which yeshiva?
I'm not allowed to tell. The school paid me not to tell anybody. I stole that from Gracie Allen. I went to a yeshiva that doesn't exist anymore called Highlight, which is now part of a school called Haftar in Lawrence. So that still around. It's been around for quite a while.
Okay, but you were a yeshiva kid.
Yeah, modern Orthodox yeshiva, which means I learned no Yiddish. Uh-huh. In yeshiva. Typical,
yes.
Not the only Yiddish I heard in 12 years of yeshiva was one curse that my 10th year Gemara Rebbe, 10th grade Gemara Rebbe taught us, still the best Yiddish curse I've ever heard, which is, Zost leben pink wie a hengleich, the hunger by tog and brenne by nacht, which means, may you live like a chandelier, hang all day and burn all night. But
fabulous.
But that's the only Yiddish I learned.
That you learned in yeshiva.
That I learned in yeshiva.
Uh-huh. 12 years, you went through all
high school?
High school,
sure.
Then where'd you go?
Then I went to Brooklyn College.
Brooklyn College. Mm-hmm. What'd you major in?
I was a film major, actually. I did not major in theater. I took a couple of theater classes, just 2 the whole time I was there. I took a 1 production seminar, and I took an intensive Shakespeare seminar, and that's all the theater I studied, but I acted in shows there all the time. So I would sit in the film department editing 16-millimeter film all day long.
16-millimeter.
Yeah, so I'm dating myself, yes. And then at night, I would hang around the theater department and act in a lot of the shows.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a second. What are your parents' names?
My father was Morris, a.k.a. Moshe, and he was a survivor from Poland.
Oh, you're second generation?
Yeah. My mother was Nettie, and she was American-born. Her parents were immigrants. So Yiddish was the first language for both of them.
And did you hear it at home?
Oh, yeah. Now, they didn't speak to me in Yiddish, but they also didn't use it for secrets.
Yes.
They just fell into it.
I came from the same kind of home.
So you understand.
You know, everyone makes a joke when my parents didn't want me to know what they're saying. They spoke Yiddish. No. Huh? My mother spoke Yiddish to her mother and a little bit to her father. And I was never taught Yiddish, but I heard it all the time.
Yeah, same with me. I taught myself how to read.
Really?
Yeah, well, because I knew the alphabet, of course.
Yes. So,
but the orthography, how it's used to make words, is completely different. I got a book. There was a Sforum store on Mott Avenue and I got this terrific little book, which I think is still in print, called The Yiddish Lehrer, and it's just a little paperback, and it's for people that don't know anything, and it starts Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and you learn everything from it.
Lovely.
Yeah.
When you grew up in your parents' home, by the way, siblings?
No, just me.
Okay.
Do you blame them?
I understand. Was it hard being the child of survivor?
No. This has come up in conversation. It's in my situation, because it was only my father who was a survivor, it was not part of the household. It was not something that was ever present. Now, I had friends who had both parents who were survivors,
yes.
And that's a very different situation.
Yes.
It's there. Now, in my case, I mean, we were the second family, completely. My father had children, siblings, and a whole family that was gone there. But even those few things that I know, interestingly, my father never told me. He told my mother some things before I was born, and I learned them from her later on.
But he didn't talk.
He didn't broach it. It's not, I wouldn't say he didn't talk, but he
about
didn't.
About it.
No, he wouldn't.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, because your mother was not a survivor, mm-hmm. You had family. Many who have 2 Holocaust survivors, there's no extended family.
We actually had very little of that, even, too. My mother had some cousins, but she was an only child as well. So it wasn't...
Not a large family.
Yeah, not particularly.
Do you have warm memories about Judaism in your home growing up?
Absolutely.
Like what?
Absolutely. You know, we're still Shomer Shabbos now as much as possible. But going to shul with my father, Shabbos, Yontif, everything.
That was nice.
Just all the basics, absolutely.
Was Friday night nice?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure, always. And I've been thinking about lately, about in later years, so I had my own place and my mother had her own place, but still Friday night I would go to my mother for dinner. This was after my father passed away. And that also is...
Very sweet.
Yeah.
Very sweet. Seder? Do you have family seders?
No, it's just me and Yelena. And we have guests.
No, always. When you were growing up?
Just the three of us.
Just the three of you?
Oh, sure, sure.
No extended family seder?
No, I mean, we didn't have any relatives who were nearby. They were all out in Ellicottsville, New Jersey,
yes,
or someplace. And no, we would. The only time we did any extended family thing is we might go to someplace to a family member on Thanksgiving. We didn't do a lot of that stuff.
Okay. And a bar mitzvah ceremony or no?
Well, then, yeah, of course.
I mean, you know, what was that like? Because, you know, today the bar mitzvah ceremony is huge, and it goes on and on and on. What was it for you?
It was a normal, modern Orthodox bar mitzvah of the time, which is to say, I had the bar mitzvah in shul.
Yeah.
And I learned the whole parsha.
Yeah.
And the Haftorah. And then we had a kiddush afterwards in shul. And then a month later on my birthday, because it was a month apart at that time, we had the reception at the big catering hall at the Washington Hotel.
Lovely.
Like everybody did. Yeah.
Lovely. All right, terrific. Okay, so all of your memories of growing up Jewish are warm and lovely, but they didn't include Yiddish for you.
No, although I was drawn to it. I remember starting as an adolescent. I just liked the sound of it. I'd say, how do you say this? What does that mean? And kind of little by little, I picked it up. And part of it may be, and here's where I'll probably make some enemies, because I learned Hebrew, modern Hebrew. Actually, we learned Ashkenazic Hebrew, Ashkenazic American Hebrew, which is the dorkiest Hebrew of all, you know. Ani holech lehabayis achshav kishani.
By the way,
in school, I was learning Hebrew. And it was just, like I say, here's where I make the enemies. It was so boring. It just is. And it's a little unfair because Yiddish is a language that grew up out of the life of a people for 1,000 years. It was steeped in that life for literally 1,000 years. Hebrew, modern Hebrew, Ben Yehuda Hebrew, has been around for a century. Yiddish has a mammoth advantage over Hebrew. Of course Hebrew is dull next to Yiddish. So, and I would hear the Hebrew and learn the Hebrew in school, and then I would hear this really colorful, juicy sounding stuff from my parents. Of course I was interested in that. So that's so I would ask, how do you say this, or what does that mean, and pick it up.
Okay. So you go to Brooklyn College.
Mm-hmm.
You study film.
Yep.
But you act.
Mm-hmm.
Do you fall in love with acting? You are a professional actor as well as an accomplished director, author, playwright, blah, blah, blah.
I've done more acting probably than anything else, although I've done everything else.
Okay. Yeah. And if people know you, who are watching now, they know you because of your acting
Absolutely.
Work. Okay. When does, you know, when, at what point does that become a professional love of yours?
Well, that's an interesting question. I just kind of sort of fell into it.
Did you?
Isn't that weird? Yeah. Just because it was something I knew how to do. And in acting, as opposed to in film work, there was a system on how to find work. I mean, it was never easy, but you knew, okay, you pick up the trade paper, you see the listing of things that are casting, et cetera, you get a headshot, you prepare a monologue, this, that, et cetera. There's a system. It wasn't all networking. So that's how I kind of fell into it. The other thing is we had a little company, a bunch of us who were in the theater crowd at Brooklyn College, formed a little off-off company that was around for a few years, and I was invited to join that. And so I've kind of got into the habit. I was working, managing a video store, if you remember those, and then acting in shows with the company at night and telling myself I'm an actor. Of course, there was no money in the acting. And then little by little, I thought, well, if I'm going to be an actor, I might as well get serious about it. So I started pursuing it more seriously on a much higher professional level. And that's how
and
I
it worked
fell
for
into it. Yeah.
Yes. And you've had a very lovely, successful professional career. And you know there are many, many actors, even good actors, who there is an element of luck, but you have to be good. And you're really good.
That's
and
right,
the things you have done are roles which, if people have seen them, they remember. And again, out of nowhere, what was it like to be in a Coen Brothers movie?
Well, that was a very interesting experience. The Coens are great.
And I'm sorry. And it had a Jewish theme.
A lot of people have called that the most Jewish movie ever made in America. I would say, if you're discounting Yiddish movies, it's between that and Hester Street. Mm-hmm. So one or the other.
What was it like to be in that movie, Serious Man?
I would say it was a wonderful experience. First of all, the Coens are terrific. And it was just a very nice production experience. We shot it, one or two stories about it. So we shot the whole thing in Minnesota. The movie is autobiographically inspired. A lot of the characters in the movie are based on people that the Coens actually knew. That's their background. That's where they grew up. And we shot it near where they grew up, and there was a converted, I think it was a warehouse, a massive warehouse that was turned into a studio. And so the cabin, the house, the Heisel, not Heisel, that means whorehouse, but the little house that we lived in was built inside this giant.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's an opening, a couple of opening shots. You've seen the movie once, you won't remember them, but they're establishing shots, the very first images of the movie. You see snow falling, and you see shtetl rooftops, and then you see me leading this gigantic horse down a street, saying, oi, savunda, oi, du savunda, and then I come into the house, and then the scene takes place. So that we shot outside the warehouse with giant snow machines and
wow.
stuff making all this. So it was just the three of us in the scene. It was me and Yelena and Five Schwenkel, Zolzan and Ganeden, lovely man. But you had this whole production facility, this whole production operation that with just us at the center.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was, and the Coens, like I say, are terrific guys. I also did the Yiddish on that. I did the translation
yes,
of the Yiddish.
Yes, I know.
The one story I'll tell you about the shooting with the horse. So I was casting a play I was directing someplace right at the period that we were shooting that. And so they flew me out just for a day to shoot the exterior scene, and then flew me back, and then the two of us flew back next week with Five-ish. I'm there for the first day. They put me into hair and makeup. They say, okay, go out and meet the Coens so they can approve the look. Great, they do it, fine. Then somebody says to me, assistant director, are you ready to meet the horse? The horse. You know, the horse. There was no horse in the script. The script that I had sent had nothing. It just had me walking down the street saying, avunda, avunda. They introduced me to this thing that I have to lead around and know how to get at the start, know how to get at the stop. And it's Godzilla's horse. Godzilla rode on this horse. It's this massive, like, you know, Clydesdale Kong that I'm leading. And if I did not know how to stop the horse exactly right, it would have kept going with me in front of it. Fortunately, the guy taught me well enough, so I was able to stop the horse.
Amazing. Working with animals is something in and of itself.
Well, I've been in Yiddish theater a lot, so.
You know, there's a scene from that movie which in some way reminds me of what you have mentioned already. You know, Ani Holech? There's a scene where somebody is in a Hebrew school mm-hmm. writing on a green back chalkboard. Mm-hmm. They're declining the verb Holech.
Oh, sure, 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 sure.
And all the kids are bored to death, and they have buds in their ears, and they're listening to, and it is quintessential what the mistake that was made for more than a generation
oh, sure.
with this Hebrew school nonsense.
Sure, sure, sure.
So I said to myself, this must have been something the Coen brothers, or at least one of them, had to endure.
No question.
Was portrayed magnificently. Yes?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Felt very accurate and felt like hell.
So at what point do you decide you know enough Yiddish that you want to do something with it in theater? And am I correct that you have a special feel for Shalom Aleichem, that somehow he became somebody who, in a literary sense, became important to you. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I want to understand, you do a lot of work with Shalom Aleichem. Mm-hmm. And people should understand, if they ever get to see Tevye served raw, mm-hmm. it's not only about Tevye the character. We see vignettes from other stories that Shalom Aleichem has written, and you do it brilliantly. Thanks. You, your wife, and
Shane Baker.
Shane Baker. Is Shane Jewish?
Shane is not Jewish, and Shane speaks the best Yiddish of, I think, anybody I have ever known in my whole life, including my parents on Zangeleden.
How do you end up with somebody not Jewish being so critically important to this production?
Oh, not just to this production. He is, you know, he runs an organization that is an old Yiddishist organization that's been around for many decades called the Congress for Jewish Culture, which he worked for a while and ultimately wound up inheriting, and does a beautiful job running it. And he does so many things in the Yiddish world in addition to acting. So he's important much more than this production.
How did you meet?
We met through Yelena, actually. Yelena was working for the Congress for a brief period, and that's how I met Shane.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Okay, you and Shalom Aleichem.
So it's, Shalom Aleichem is not the only Yiddish writer I have that kind of feel with, or I have that kind of interest in.
Who
there
else?
Are others. Beg pardon?
Who else?
Well, but specifically, I'm a big play reader. I've always read more plays than anything else. Plays are nonfiction mostly. So there are a couple of Yiddish playwrights that I'm particularly interested in. Goldfaden, who was the guy who started it all, the beginning of the modern professional Yiddish theater. There's a wonderful playwright called Leon Kobrin. I directed one of his plays about 16 years ago, and I'm going to be translating a different play of his that we will do a reading of at YIVO sometime, I think, in the summer. And Kobrin was a playwright from the early 20th century who had a wonderful knack for capturing Lower East Side life. What Shalom Aleichem is to the shtetl, and this is one of the things that's so wonderful about Shalom Aleichem, because he was really there, and because his stuff is like looking through a mirror or looking through a window into that world. Mm-hmm. Kobrin is the equivalent for the Lower East Side immigration era. He's a wonderful playwright and is underknown. And so there are a couple like that. But certainly as for fiction, Shalom Aleichem. And Shalom Aleichem is, which is not to say there aren't other great writers of Yiddish fiction, but Shalom Aleichem is the one that I guess I most connect with. He's a perfect view into that life. I mean, we have so little knowledge. A typical modern American Jew, we know nothing.
Nothing.
Of Jewish life in
nothing.
Eastern Europe. Basically, from the time of, basically the end of the Torah period, maybe, you know, get into Joshua and Judges, not even beyond that, but then, let's see, we know the Hanukkah story, we know two sentences about the Spanish Inquisition, plus the scene from the Mel Brooks movie, and that's about it there. Obviously, we know about the Holocaust, and then Israel on. In between, basically, the Holocaust and going back to the end of the Torah period, we know nothing. We don't know where we came from. We don't know how. We have all of these characteristics and all of these attitudes, this type of humor that we think of as typically Jewish, and we have not the beginning of a clue where it comes from, what the root of it is. And the root of it is Yiddish, and the root of it is shtetl Yiddish. And from Shalom Aleichem, we see that so clearly.
Mm-hmm. You've seen Fiddler, I'm sure, more than once.
Sure.
Have you ever played Tevye in Fiddler?
No, I played, wait a minute. Here's something I honestly don't remember. I don't think I played Tevye. There was in a shul in my neighborhood, they had a youth program there when I was about 10, 11 years old, and they did a little mini production of Fiddler. And I remember they wanted me to play Tevye, and I didn't want to. I wanted to play Laser Wolf so I could be a so I could be a butcher like my father.
That's a nice reason.
Yeah.
That's a nice reason.
And then I played Laser Wolf in a regional theater production a few years ago. I've never played Tevye in the musical.
I played Tevye.
Whereabouts?
I played Tevye in a community theater in Connecticut. It was a 7-week run. It was one of the special moments of my life. And so I have very protective feelings about Tevye in that sense. And I'm always, it's hard for me to enjoy now. Mm-hmm. somebody else's Tevye.
Understandable.
You understand?
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, my point for asking you is...
I also directed once. I directed a community theater production a long time ago.
In my open, I mentioned that there was a difference between the Tevye of the Broadway musical and the Tevye in the Shalom Aleichem story. Mm-hmm. Do you feel I'm correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. I want you to talk about that. How would you?
How many hours do you have?
How would you define for the audience the difference in character between the original Tevye of Shalom Aleichem and the one that becomes, I use the phrase cartoon character, and it's not like I'm in any way disparaging Fiddler on the Roof. It's just a different story. Talk about it for a moment.
The cartoon character is not inaccurate for this reason. I mean, it does sound like it's denigrating, but no, there's an accuracy to it. A cartoon, think of a Hirschfeld cartoon, or a good one like that. You're taking the few basic outlines of a person and you're defining them by these few basic things. It's authentic. When you see a Hirschfeld cartoon, you know exactly who it is, but it's not loaded with detail. It's a few external things. So that's not inaccurate. But there are some essential differences between the Tevye of Fiddler and Shalom Aleichem's Tevye. One is that the Tevye of Fiddler is a kind of an American prejudiced idea of what the shtetl Jew was. And I'll explain
yes,
what I mean
please,
by that.
Please, please.
David, I believe it was David Landis, who was an excellent Yiddish theater historian and translator, wrote an essay about it years ago, and he talks about this specifically. Tevye the musical, his big problem is that his daughters are getting married without his consent. Tevye and the Shalom Aleichem stories, it's not about his consent at
Correct.
All. He wouldn't understand their different values to his, but it's not what it seems to be in the musical. And what it is in the musical is an American idea of, well, this guy's old world. This guy's orthodox and old world. Therefore, he must have a rigid spine and get enough. How dare you do something without my say? And that is, why how do you do something without my permission, without my say-so? That's not Jewish. That's goyish. That's, you know, no offense to goyim, but that's, you know, that's goyish. And that's, Fiddler on the Roof is, in many respects, a pretty goyish show. It has an agenda. This is not to say that it isn't a terrific piece of musical theater, and that it doesn't, and that it is understandable in so many ways why it's been so successful all over the world. It has been forever, I think still is, the most popular American musical in South America for themes and things like that. And there's things
played in Japan.
You know the famous story about there's a Japanese actor who is associated with Tevye. You know this story, don't you?
Tell the story.
And there's the Japanese guy who always plays Tevye, and supposedly he was here once, I think, and he asked, oh, Fiddler on the Roof is popular in America, dude. Yeah, he couldn't believe it. It's so Japanese, which is understandable. But
by the way, there is a universal theme in the musical.
Of course there is.
Right? Define it.
The universal theme in the musical is changing times.
Yes.
And Shalom Aleichem also was writing about changing times very much. As a matter of fact, one very interesting thing about Shalom Aleichem is he very deliberately wanted to record the Yiddish that he knew, because in a changing world, as things were, even at that time, becoming somewhat homogenized, nothing like now, after decades and decades of mass media and so forth, we were all so much more similar to each other. You know, think of people you know a generation or two older. They're much bigger characters than now. They're much less eccentric. That's because we've been homogenized by what by seeing and hearing the same thing. In any case, but Shalom Aleichem wanted to preserve the most flamboyant Yiddish, and so he got it in all of his stories and his plays.
Okay, come back.
Please.
You were explaining the difference between the quote cartoon character mm-hmm. in the musical mm-hmm. and the character that Shalom Aleichem draws.
Big part of that is not just the character of Tevye, but the context. And this is a key thing, and this is why I say what's so vivid about Fiddler being very, very American and being a very different thing than Shalom Aleichem. Something that is very present in Shalom Aleichem, and he doesn't write about it literally, but is the reality of Eastern European anti-Semitism, what a pogrom was. This is something that, along with the rest of our ignorance about, you know, just not knowing what life was like there, we have no idea what this is, but you read one vivid description of a pogrom, and I've read a few, it'll change your life. If you've ever read a description of the Armenian genocide, which is the exact same thing, Armenians and Turks living side by side for centuries, and then all of a sudden, neighbors go into their neighbors' homes and butcher them, and do things that are absolutely unbelievable to them, to a neighbor and a fellow human being and somebody. And this was exactly what a pogrom was like. This is what happened, and it didn't happen every day, and it didn't happen every year, but every so often, 5 years ago in a town 30 versts away or whatever it is, it happened over there, and then 2 years ago someplace else. And this was overhanging the life. This is underneath the you have to know that before reading the stories with Tevye. It's there. It's the found, it's part of the foundation, part of the dramatic foundation that's underneath it. Also, one liberty that they took in the musical, which is actually, I think, a very understandable one, is they physically moved Tevye. Tevye in Shalom Aleichem doesn't live in a shtetl, doesn't live in Anatevka. He lives in a dorf. A dorf is a suburb of a shtetl. He is the only Jew in his area. He has all of his neighbors are Gentile, and he has very good relations with his neighbors, but it's a very different animal than being a Jew in a shtetl. Now, it's understandable for the musical. Correct. They want to create all these, right. You know, that's a different thing. But it does also give a little bit of different atmosphere of Tevye's relationship with his neighbors.
Interesting.
And a key thing, the thing that I think is most important, and this is very vivid in our show, which we took directly from the stories and from the history. In Fiddler on the Roof, the intermarriage with Chava and Fedka is treated as though it's an American intermarriage. It's treated as though, oh, this is a perfectly normal, reasonable thing, nothing wrong with this, and if you don't accept it, you are a bigot. And Tevye is made out to be a bigot, as far as that goes in the musical. In reality, if there was going to be an intermarriage in Tsarist Russia, which also covered, of course, Ukraine and Poland and the whole Russian Empire, if there was going to be an intermarriage, if a woman wanted to marry a Gentile man, a Jewish woman, she had to move in with the priest, lose all connections with her family, convert to the religion. He couldn't convert to Judaism, and they couldn't have a secular civil marriage and have nothing. They had to get married by the priest, and she had to convert to Russian Orthodoxy, which is the religion that has been persecuting them, that was responsible for all of these horrors that happened to them for centuries. So if a Jewish woman married a Gentile man in Tsarist Russia, it wasn't the same thing happening in Illinois.
Fairfield County, Connecticut.
In Fairfield County, Connecticut.
Correct.
It was, she was joining the enemy. It's horrible to have to think that way, but this was the reality. There were wonderful people there, Gentiles. God knows how many of them. When I went to Yad Vashem, I saw everything there, and the one thing that absolutely destroyed me inside, 10 times as much as anything else in Yad Vashem, was when I went out and saw the Garden of the Righteous, the section where they do honor to the Gentiles who saved Jewish lives in the Holocaust. Because they didn't have to do it. Because these are people who for a fellow human being, put themselves on the line. This
remarkable human beings, almost
saints.
Yeah, I get chills thinking of it.
Yeah, same
and
here.
I don't know what I would have done if things were reversed. It's very hard to risk your family and your children, let alone your life, but your children's lives. And these people did that.
Did exactly that. Risked everything, and they didn't have to.
They didn't have to.
Anyhow, to get back though to the Fiddler question, so. Fiddler depicts the intermarriage as an intermarriage in Fairfield, Connecticut, but then it was a very different animal, and that is part of the biggest, I think, corruption of Shalom Aleichem that they did where they made a musical. There's one absolutely horrible moment in Fiddler, and it's a moment that people goes by a lot of people. But in the scene late in the second act, when Tevye rejects Chavin Fedka.
Correct.
The chorus walks by upstage singing tradition, tradition.
Yes.
And what is the message that the writers are telling us? It is his being married to these old-fashioned traditions, customs, you know, these old-world ways of thinking that makes him reject them. And then at the very end of Fiddler, which is a totally different ending than the ending of the story.
Totally.
Shalom Aleichem.
Right.
You know, Tevye is made out by not accepting Fedka. Fedka has the last line on Tevye. Some people are turned away by edicts, others by silence. Tevye is the bad guy. This is a terrible thing to do. But it's because the writers of the show had a very different agenda.
You know, when you watch Fiddler on the Roof, it looks like, although, you know, they were the minority and they had to worry about, ultimately they're thrown out of Anatevka, life seemed pretty good. And my wife's father came from the Pale of Settlement. Mm. He saw Fiddler on the Roof, he was enraged. That's not how life was. It's not how dirty it was. It's not how hard it was. It's not how sad it was. It's not how difficult it was. It wasn't, you know, dancing around in a bar with non-Jews who had bottles on their head. And there was danger all the time. And my grandmother told me how, as a child, she would hide under the, she had to hide under the floorboards when the Cossacks came through with pogroms so that she wouldn't get raped. And she was scared to death. That fear never left her. Alan, to the her end of her life, she still was afraid in some way of the experience that she saw all around her. But, and again, it's, I told you, I played Tevye, I love the musical, but there are things about it which I feel are dishonest.
Let me bring another one
please.
Up.
Please.
And this is also a really key thing, and this is part of the agenda of the American writers of the show. When the Yiddish translation, which is running now in the revival, was first done by Shraga Friedman, or Feldman, I think it's Friedman, the Israeli who did the Yiddish translation. He did a beautiful job. His Yiddish is lovely. He changed tradition to de Teure. They're singing de Teure, which is exactly right. Mm-hmm. Because what was at the backbone of Jewish life for all those centuries in the shtetl and all the times before that? It was Am HaSefer, it was the book. It was the piece, it was the thing that was written on the piece of paper. This is the law. We believe God gave this to Moses, Moses gave it to us, and this is what we do it and why. In the famous opening monologue, Fiddler on the Roof, when Tevye says, for example, we always keep our heads covered and we always wear this little prayer shawl. How did this tradition start? I'll tell you. I don't know, but it's a tradition. That's crap. Tevye is an Orthodox Jew. He says the Shema three times every day. The Shema is a direct quote from the Torah. You don't have to be a deeply learned rabbi to know this. This is basics. This is 101. And in the Shema, directly quoting the Torah, it says, wear the tzitzis, wear the prayer shawl. God wants you to do exactly this and this. If it was honest, it would say, why do we do this? Because God said to do this.
Exactly right.
But they don't say it's the law or de Teure, as was originally written in the Israeli Yiddish translation. They say tradition. Well, what's tradition? Tradition means custom. It means my grandmother put sugar into her stuffed cabbage. That's our tradition. That's our custom. And so the basic message of the musical that they altered from the show is that these things are no more important than the way you wear your hat on one side rather than the other, or whether you put sugar into your gefilte fish or not. And that's a very distorted adaptation of Shalom Aleichem, but it's because it was written not by shtetl Jews and not by Jews who are wonderful, brilliant musical theater writers, three of the very, very top. but they're not educated Jews. They just don't have didn't have the background.
Yes.
And they did not want to suggest, as Shalom Aleichem wrote, that intermarriage in the shtetl could be was a bad thing. You know, if you want to write
bad isn't strong enough.
What was that?
Bad isn't strong
enough. Yeah, I know. I'm underdoing it. But if you want to tell that story, then do, you know, Bridget loves Bernie. Nothing wrong with that. I personally don't have a philosophical problem with intermarriage. Forgive me, I'll make enemies with that. But if you're not religious, there's a religious prohibition on intermarriage. If the religion is meaningless to you, then what difference does it make in modern America?
Yes. You know, it's interesting. The audience, in some way, roots for the daughters. Mm-hmm. And each daughter moves away another degree.
Yes, that's how good those three guys were who wrote the musical.
Yes.
They structured it perfectly.
By the way, I know Sheldon Harnack. I love him as a person. Mm-hmm. He's not an educated Jew, but he's a lovely guy.
Sure.
And he's brilliant at what he did.
Superb.
A great lyricist. At the same time, everything you say is exactly right. The audience roots for the daughters, although they have empathy for Tevye. Mm-hmm. In other words, we love Tevye. We hope if Tevye is good, you end up loving him. Mm-hmm. You love Tevye, but you're rooting for the daughters.
That's right.
Each daughter seems to be going in a direction that is modern and advanced, and Tevye has to catch up. And, you know, he, in the play, also in Shalom Aleichem's original, Tevye never gets over Chava. Mm-hmm. Okay, Chava goes with the Russian, right? In the play, the daughters come as Tevye is about to leave Anatevka. Mm-hmm. And although he does not speak to Chava, through a daughter, he wishes her well.
Right.
Is the same thing true in Shalom Aleichem's story?
No. The situation is much more fraught.
Yes.
And I will... I'm loath to give it away.
No, don't.
I'll say this much.
I just want the audience to know. Many lovely scenes in Tevye Served Raw. Mm-hmm. I am blown away by you mm-hmm. in the last scene. This is before the encore. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm seeing the real Tevye. And you do it brilliantly.
Well, thank you so much.
It is heartbreaking.
Thank you so much.
And if there was one reason every person who can should see Tevye Served Raw, it's to see that last scene, which is an authentic scene. By the way, I will say this. Golda's arc is not the same Golda's arc in Shalom Aleichem than it is in...
In the musical.
No, because everything is made nice and sweet. And there's a tragedy to Golda, which... is not ever seen in the musical.
I'll tell you a good place to see that, and I don't want to get too far off track, but we should actually get to this soon, but is the Morris Schwartz movie.
Yes, I was going to ask you, how do you place that in the evolution of the Tevye story?
How do I play? Well, first
again, Morris Schwartz does the definitive Yiddish, black and white, early 20th century film Tevye the Dairyman.
He is the genuine artist. Forgive me. I do the best I can, and I so appreciate, you know, and our reviews have been spectacular. That's great. I'm not worthy to touch Schwartz's, you know, the hem of his garment or whatever.
And neither am I.
Schwartz was, I'll tell you a quick side story. I worked years ago in Yiddish theater with a lovely actor named David Rogoff, the late David Rogoff, and I looked in his bio and noticed that he had worked with Schwartz. And I was very, very impressed. And I said, you worked with Morris Schwartz? And he said, yeah, Schwartz was good, but Bulov. Bulov was what they all read. But we don't have any Bulov in Yiddish. Bulov did a few movies in English, and he's wonderful. But we don't have any comparable.
But your point about the movie.
So the movie, in the historical context of where it belongs in the development of the Tevye story, the story is this. Shalom Aleichem wrote originally as a series of short stories. He then adapted it to the stage as a play. He took that play around. He was living in the United States at that time. He took that play around, tried to sell it to a couple of people. He tried to get Jacob P. Adler to do it. Now, Jacob P. Adler, who was the great Yiddish czar of his era, everybody knows him as Stella Adler's father, but he alone was a lot more than Stella Adler's father. He was the great Yiddish tragedian of his era, and maybe of ever, of a, right. In a certain type of role. He acted in these tragedies that Jacob Gordon, who was a lovely, very interesting playwright, wrote for him, where it was always these characters who had giant conflicts, and who had giant larger-than-life issues. They weren't melodramatic. They were written in naturalistic Jewish environments. They weren't forced or hokey or anything like that, but the conflicts, what was under the stakes, were tremendously, tremendously high. And these were the kind of roles that he liked to play. So Shlomo Aleichem tried to get him interested in not Fiddler, in Tevye. And he wasn't interested at all because he didn't want to play an ordinary Jew. He didn't want to play this ordinary little man with his daughters who lives in a dolphin. You know, where's the big, giant, tragic moment? So he didn't do it. Now, Shlomo Aleichem died in 1916. He, side note, something like 100,000 people turned out for his funeral. A writer. Imagine that. Imagine that in 2019. 100,000 people turning out to pay their respects to a writer. Nowadays, you'd be lucky if you got 9 people. Anyhow, so he died in 1916. The play is never produced in his lifetime. 3 years later, Schwartz, who had his own organization at that time, the Yiddish Art Theater, negotiated with Shlomo Aleichem's widow to do the premiere, the stage premiere of Tevye, the Milchige. And he did some adaptation of the play with a fellow named I.D. Berkovich, who was Shlomo Aleichem's nephew, his literary executor. And so they took Shlomo Aleichem's play that had never been produced, did a bit more adaptation of it, bringing in some elements of the stories that he had left out. And then that was the beginning of Shlomo Aleichem, of Tevye on stage. Schwartz did it with a big hit. It was a big hit with Yiddish Art Theater in 1919. He revived it twice with the company in New York. I'm sure he did it on tour in other countries. But he did it 2 more times in New York, the last time in 1938, and then the following year made the movie of it. The movie, which is spectacular. It is, now I'm one of a big chassid of Yiddish movies. I've seen them all. I've done presentations about them. I actually am just in the process of completing. There is a package of 10 newly restored Yiddish movies that Kino Lorber is going to be putting out, one of which is Tevye the Milchige, and I've written subtitles for all of them, all but one. And that movie is one of the 2 or 3 greatest movies ever made in Yiddish. And it's such a... Schwartz is superb, but it's beautifully produced, and it really feels like this is what it looked like. This, and of course, the people who worked on the movie... The movie's made in 1939. Mm. Schwartz was born in Houston, Europe. Half the other people there came from there. It's in the blood. It's there. And it's well produced, too. It's not cheaply done. And so they just did a beautiful, beautiful job with it.
How would you now compare the Tevye of the movie to the Tevye of the Shlomo Aleichem original and the Tevye of Fiddler?
The Tevye of... The Schwartz movie is the Tevye of Shlomo Aleichem's original.
Correct.
No question.
Right.
And the Tevye of Fiddler is a very different animal. It is a very, as we've been talking about. The Tevye of Fiddler is that, you know, cartoon of an old world
yes.
patriarch. And I think you phrased it very well when you said Tevye has the one who has to keep catching up, has to keep bending to accommodate himself to the modern times of his daughters. You know, he's the one who's behind. They're the ones who are ahead. And that's not in Shlomo Aleichem and in the Schwartz version and in our version. It's not that at all.
Well, again, I can't tell you how wonderful it was to watch what you did with Tevye, and I appreciated it profoundly. What do you think the future of Yiddish is, Alan?
It's funny, we have a show that we do called The Essence of Yiddish Theater Dim Sum, where we talk about the history of Yiddish theater. That's what the show's about. It's a review about the history and the language. And we end with exactly that. The question that people always ask us, what is the future of Yiddish theater? I'll give you a quote that we use in the show. There was, what is the name of that theater critic? Oh, that's going to lose something if I can't remember his name. But in any case, there was a theater critic who said that it is doubtful whether Yiddish theater can subsist in America another 10 years. He said that in 1890. So What is the future of Yiddish or the future of Yiddish theater? This is, it's a question that you can't answer, really. On the one hand, there is no question that Yiddish is growing in popularity, is growing in interest, has been for a very long time. And there are a number of reasons for that. Where it's principally growing, I mean, I think its principal appeal is that it is, for people who want a connection to their Jewish background, but are not comfortable being near religion itself, they can get basically everything they get out of religion, aside from the religious feeling, they can get out of Yiddish. The color, the richness, the humor, the expressiveness, mm-hmm. the sentiment, this, mm-hmm. that, it's all there in the language. The language is a wonderful vehicle to carry everything that we think of as Jewish, at least as Ashkenazic Jewish. So that appeal as religion, aside from Orthodoxy, is decreasing everywhere, the appeal of Yiddish is growing. Yiddish theater is doing better now than it has in some time. There is more Yiddish theater now than there has been in 30 some odd years.
Did you see the Yiddish production of Death of a Salesman?
I did.
What'd you think?
They did a nice job. They did a nice
job. I thought so too.
There's a wonderful quote, which we also mentioned in the Essence. That was Joseph Bulloff's translation. And when Bulloff did it in New York in 1951, the original reviews said that that had to have been the original language and Miller translated it into English. But they have a point. It's like the original language.
Yes.
And now you've seen Godot, I assume.
No, I haven't.
All right. Well, here I'll tell you the whole true story about the Yiddish Godot is I was approached about doing it early on. When it was first, because it's gone through several legs of production in New York, and I wasn't interested. I had done Godot in English, a very fine production in a top regional theater with very good people. It's not my favorite play, but I only do it in English. And I passed on it. And Yelena and I went to see the production because we had to. We knew everybody involved with it. Halfway through the first act, Yelena and I, Yelena didn't want to go. I didn't want to go. We both knew Godot. Godot is always so pretentious and deadly and slow and it's homework. It's castor oil.
It's home. But that's how I experience it.
Absolutely.
And I've seen it with great actors. That's hard for me.
It's homework. Halfway through the first act of the original leg of the Yiddish production, Yelena and I, unprompted, turned to each other and said, "This is terrific!" And it was. Now I came into it afterwards, and I did it. With New Yiddish Rep when we did it in Ireland there in the International Samuel Beckett Festival.
Why is it better in Yiddish?
Du liegt hintergruben. That's where the dog is buried. I mean, that's exactly it. I'll tell you what the Irish said to me. At least half a dozen people came up to us through the run. We did 11 performances there in the festival. And at least half a dozen times, people came up to us and said, "I've seen Godot I don't know how many times. I don't speak a word of Yiddish. This is the first time it made sense to
yes.
me. This is the first time I got it." Because it stripped away the Yiddish version, which is Shane Baker's, by the way, Yiddish translation, and it is superb. Shane's Yiddish is gorgeous. But even if you don't understand the Yiddish, the flavor is so rich. When you strip away the pretentiousness, what you see is these two idiots, us, standing there, trying to figure out what does it all mean? Why are we here? What do we want out of life? What are we waiting for? This is what the play is really about. The problem is Beckett's English is kind of clunky. He wrote it originally in French. I don't know what the French is like. I don't speak French. But he wrote it originally in French. He translated it into English. And it's written in this kind of, let's call it pseudo-poetic English that doesn't feel naturalistic, doesn't feel like dialogue. The Yiddish version feels like just people talking. And the thing that, and this speaks to the question of what's the future of Yiddish
yes.
theater or what's the appeal of Yiddish
yes.
theater, when you see something, people go to see movies, foreign movies, all the time with subtitles typically. Well, you can also see them dubbed. Some people prefer them dubbed, but some people prefer subtitles. What's the advantage to seeing it with subtitles when you see an Italian movie with subtitles and you hear the original Italian coming from the actors? The language, even though you don't understand it, becomes the musical underscoring. It becomes the musical let us say, bed on which the action is sitting. It's the exact same with Yiddish. The music of the Yiddish, even if you don't understand it, as long as you have good supertitle translation, and that's something I am a maniac about, it's a separate conversation, but as long as you have good translation with the supertitles, that Yiddish gives you a flavor that you wouldn't get otherwise. So you go to Yiddish theater, I always say, Yiddish theater needs to be done in such a way that people are going to Yiddish theater not for the Yiddish, but for the theater. And if you'd make the theater so that people go for it, if the theater is good enough in itself, and it's compelling and interesting and fun and human and alive, they'll come.
That's exactly what you do, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
You have defined what you do. It is, you're wonderful.
Oh, that's right.
And I'm so glad you came, and I'm so glad I had a chance to really get to know you. I hope there are other reasons that I can convince you to come. Talk to me about Yiddish. Talk to our audience about Yiddish. But I wish you, Alan, kol tuv hatzlacha to you. Only the best to you. Thank you so, so very much.
Herzlichen Dank.
Thank you. There you have it. Alan Lewis Rickman, a wildly talented actor, writer, director, and a Jew who loves Yiddish. Not only Shalom Aleichem, the whole panoply. And he's given us Tevye Served Raw. I hope you've enjoyed meeting him here on L'Chaim. And remember, if you live in the greater New York metropolitan area, you have until Wednesday, February 13th to see Tevye Served Raw at the Playroom Theater, 151 West 46th Street, just east of 7th Avenue. As always, I invite you to be in touch with me with any thoughts or comments you may have to any of the ideas expressed here on this edition of L'Chaim. Please email me, write me, post on our Facebook page, or tweet me. I look forward to hearing from many of you. Until the next time, I'm Mark Golub. L'Chaim, my friends, to life.
Jewish Education in Media.
We would be pleased to send a complimentary DVD of this program to anyone who wishes to support JBS with a tax-deductible gift of $36, double chai, or more. Simply visit the JBS website at jbstv.org and click on the Donate button to make a donation by PayPal or your credit card. And please, indicate the program for which you would like a DVD. Or you can send your tax-deductible check to JBS, P.O. Box 180, Riverdale Station, Bronx, New York, 10471. And again, please remember to indicate which program you would like to receive with our compliments. And we thank you for your kind support.